Yes, my title is Why Evangelicals Don't Like Austrian Political Economy But Should. The subtitle is Observations of an Evangelical Who Worked for Both Reverend Jerry Falwell and Representative Ron Paul. But there's another subtitle, though, another possible subtitle, and that is Adventures of a Paulite in Falwell Land. That's more catchy. But my background really constitutes part of my observations. So I want to go through that just for a minute. My entire nearly 30-year academic career has been within the evangelical community. First at Grove City College, where I taught political science for a while. And I guess the real question is, why did I leave there? Does that question my sanity? I went from Grove City College to Liberty University, which was founded by Jerry Falwell. Was there quite a while, and most of the time there was chairman of the government department there at Liberty University. And then just a couple of years ago went to Bryan College in Tennessee, which is also an evangelical college. I also worked for the Ron Paul campaign on the full-time staff for a few months in 2008. And some of the experiences I had with that campaign touched the evangelical community. In fact, one of them, and I won't spend much time on this, involved bringing Representative Paul to speak at Liberty University in front of 10,000 people in convocation. I had left Liberty by then, so I was not employed by them, but I was employed to bring him there, and I did that. And I think the really interesting thing about that incident, that activity, was that I found out later that the chancellor of Liberty University, who was Jerry Falwell's son now, Jerry Falwell had died a short time earlier, had warned the audience in an earlier convocation that we're going to have a speaker, he's a Republican, but we don't agree with a lot of the things he stands for, so be polite, but don't be enthusiastic. And I observed the audience there. They were not very enthusiastic for the most part. They were sometimes, though, and I'll touch upon that. So my career really forms part of my observations. My analysis here will be largely confined to that part of evangelicalism generally known as the Christian right. Some evangelicals might distance themselves from people like Jerry Falwell or Pat Robertson or James Dobson, to name a few, and yet still fall into the category of the Christian right because of both theology and political views. With apologies to my Roman Catholic colleagues, I also will confine my analysis to Protestant evangelicalism, which some define as the only type of evangelicalism. And in so doing, I'll point to the obvious, namely that there are significant, even if not fundamental, differences between Roman Catholicism and Protestantism, the most important of which is their views of Scripture. That plays prominently in this analysis, by the way. This is important because evangelicals base much of their thinking on, at least they say this, on the Bible, not natural law, not tradition, not natural rights, not the pronouncements of the church, although some accuse them of having multiple popes, a pope in every town, or much else except the Bible. So this is the environment in which we will analyze this. Some definitions, real quick definitions, historical background. Evangelicalism would certainly be defined minimally, and most of the time in the 20th century has been defined minimally, including the pre-existing fundamentalist movement, by a few doctrines. And these doctrines I will list as the inerrancy and authority of the Scriptures. That's the paramount one, the deity of Jesus Christ, the virgin birth, substitutionary sacrifice of Jesus Christ, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. There are some others, but those are some of the key ones. We'll deal with a few other doctrines that have not been so common or agreed upon among evangelicals, and which actually contribute to the antithesis toward Austrianism later. By this standard, there's a certain unity among otherwise diverse groups, such as Southern Baptists, and there are millions of them, Independent Baptists, Charismatics, Pentecostals, some Presbyterian groups, and at least one major branch of Lutherans, a Missouri Synod branch, among others. Furthermore, there are individuals who would identify with evangelicalism, scattered within the so-called mainline Protestant denominations, though the denominations themselves would not be considered part of evangelicalism. But most interesting, and I think important for this presentation, are some of the recent, and I do emphasize recent, non-theological, strictly speaking, non-theological concepts which have been adopted pretty much uniformly among evangelicals. This I call applied evangelicalism. Applied evangelicalism. One, political conservatism, somewhat vaguely defined, but with some of the gaps filled in. Two, the social issues are of paramount importance. That is, the immorality of abortion, the immorality of gay marriage, and so forth. Three, certain behaviors are immoral and should be regulated or perhaps even outlawed by governments, such as alcohol use, drug use, pornography use, gambling. Four, free market economics is good, but a caveat to that, very few evangelicals have a grasp of what free market economics is. More about that later. In fact, a somewhat telling detail of the evangelical invasion, if you will, of free market economics is the total lack of any commentary on monetary policy. There's almost nothing out there by evangelicals regarding monetary policy, which means that they either usually implicitly or explicitly accept the existence of, if not the efficacy of, the Federal Reserve System. Now, this is, of course, a major deviation from Austrian economics. It's very tempting to argue that were it not for Ron Paul and later his 2008 presidential bid, combined with the 2008-10 recession, or whatever you want to call it, evangelicals would still be silent, connoting either agreement with or ignorance of, or both, the role of the Fed. Now, there's now a greater spotlight on monetary policy, of course, and the Fed, but it remains to be seen, and I think this is really crucial, it remains to be seen whether evangelicals will add some sort of anti-Fed plank, if you will, plank, I call it a plank, to their political economy platform. Fifth, evangelicals have a stated reverence for the Constitution of the Founding Fathers. However, I would say that that is usually combined with a fairly abysmal knowledge of what the Constitution actually says. A problem, of course, shared by many Americans, but it's a distinct problem. It's a definite problem for a group that says it has a high regard for the Constitution. Sixth, evangelicals typically say they stand for a strong defense. But it is, of course, questionable exactly what they mean by that. Sometimes it would seem that what they mean is a far-flung military presence and fairly extensive use of military force, especially in the Middle East. More on that later. That's also a crucial idea. And related to the seventh one, the last one on my list, the United States is morally obligated to support Israel. With a very recent corollary, and I say it's a corollary to the war on terror, which seems to be linked in the minds of many evangelicals anyway, as much to protecting Israel as avenging America and preventing Islamic terrorism, sometimes seems to me, at least my observations are, it seems like a war on Islam of sorts. Now, Austrianism very quickly. Most everybody in this room, maybe everybody in this room is Austrian, so I don't think we need to do a whole lot of definition there. I want to focus on some of the applied Austrianism that will contrast with some of the applied evangelicalism. Limited government, free markets, sound money, non-interventionism in foreign affairs, non-regulation or non-criminalization of most, if not all, social behaviors such as drug use, alcohol use, tobacco use, and so forth. Non-interventionism, by the way, in foreign affairs, just for the record, should not be equated, certainly in the minds of evangelicals it wouldn't be, with pacifism, certainly not with categorical pacifism, nor should it be seen, at least by most Austrians, as advocating a quote-unquote weak defense, defense being defined literally and narrowly as defending one's country from actual foreign attack, not intervening in other countries to overthrow bad regimes or establish Western-style democracies, or resolve civil wars, or genocides, or other activities. So in defining Austrianism this way, I've taken some liberty with original Austrianism, of course, which was exclusive economic theory. However, there are many implications. The applications of Austrianism And that's what I call applied Austrianism. On the surface, then, it would appear at first glance that evangelicals would find a lot of common cause with Austrian political economy. But they don't. So the question is, why do they not? Why do they not do this? This is the crucial question in the paper. I can say this, speaking as an evangelical Austrian, I can say, and I'll get into this as we go forward, that Protestant Christianity is quite amiable toward Austrianism if, and this is the crucial if for evangelicals, if the data from the scriptures, which evangelicals say they follow wholeheartedly, is considered carefully and seriously, much of current evangelicalism to the contrary notwithstanding. There's the problem. Now, what are the reasons that Austrians and evangelicals don't seem to get along? First, Austrianism is closely associated with libertarianism in the minds of evangelicals, and evangelicals are deeply suspicious of what is perceived to be a libertine philosophy. This, I think, is largely due to evangelical misunderstanding. First, there are two misunderstandings. First, what may appear to be libertarianism may, at least in some cases, simply be federalism. In other words, the fact that the national government is not regulating something. Why? Because the Constitution prohibits such exercise of federal power, does not necessarily mean that a state government cannot do that. Although we're not speaking about the propriety of doing it, we're just talking about the legality of doing it. And I think a lot of evangelicals don't see this. They want the federal government to do everything. Everything that is bad. They want to use the power of the federal government to bring about what they consider to be good or right in many cases, ignoring the ethical importance of the jurisdictional question. But the second problem here, I think, is this. And this is more of a specifically evangelical problem. Evangelicals really often fail to understand their own data from the Bible. To a very great extent, while the Bible may judge some behavior as sin, it does not necessarily also define it as a crime. That is something to be legislated or regulated. In short, not all sins are crimes in the Bible. In fact, many are not. And by the way, I would just point you, if you're not very familiar with evangelical literature, to an individual who has been very influential in my life, and that is Dr. Greg Bonson, late Dr. Greg Bonson. He was a philosopher. His PhD advisor in California was John Hospers, the famous libertarian. And in fact, Dr. Greg Bonson once said that he considered himself to be almost a libertarian. But he was a big proponent of this biblical idea, not all sins are crimes. And that is, I think, crucial for evangelicals to understand, but they frequently ignore it. If they followed their own epistemology, the scriptures, they would not ignore it. Of course, anyone familiar with the Bible could argue that this is not always the case. There may arguably, depending on biblical hermeneutics, be some biblically defining sins that might be interpreted as biblically defined crimes. At least some such cases, there could be congruence for different reasons between the Bible and Austrianism, such as laws about murder, kidnapping, theft. With others, there might be controversy. We're not going to deal here with controversial sin crimes. There's overwhelming agreement among all ideologies in America that these are outside the boundaries of government, regardless of what the Bible might say today. So there's no use in getting into those. Some of the sins but not crimes in the Bible, and in fact in some evangelical circles, maybe not even sins, depending on the specific behavior, might be alcohol use, drug use, pornography, tobacco use, gambling. Abortion is a touchy one, though. Abortion is unique, and of course is seen that way by evangelicals because of the argument that a human being is involved. The main point here is that there are many behaviors which might be immoral, according to the scriptures, or non-ideal, or perhaps injurious, or maybe none of these, depending on whether one comes from the fundamentalistic branch of evangelicalism or the more, quote-unquote, reformed branch, which is the one I come from. I come from the Calvinistic branch of evangelicalism. According to the Bible, that law should not regulate. And most evangelicals simply do not see this. Substantial freedom may not always be pretty. On the societal level, of course, evangelicals are free to regulate these things to an extent within their own societies, their own churches. But it is not necessarily unbiblical, according to the Bible itself. Second big reason why Austrians and evangelicals don't get along. Evangelicals have scant history, very scant history, of a truly Christian philosophy of either government or economics, except in isolated cases involving mostly scholars from the Reformed branch of evangelicalism, who constitute a distinct minority today. In medieval times, there were pockets of such understanding and application. This was pre-Protestant, proto-Protestant, whatever you want to call it. With the Protestant Reformation came a more coherent understanding of politics, forming one root of modern evangelicalism, especially in the form of the development of ideas like the rule of law, constitutionalism, and resistance to tyranny, resistance to tyrants. The writings of the Huguenots in France, for example, the writings of the Reformers in England and Scotland, and so forth. However, in modern evangelicalism, especially with the rise of some of the frontier denominations, I call them, and the rise of dispensationalism, which is a particular theology within evangelicalism, both in the 19th century, and then fundamentalism, which is more of a 20th century development, Christian-based economic theory, again with a few isolated exceptions, has been even less developed, except for the modern generalities. We like free enterprise, whatever that means. There's the problem. By the end of the 19th century, many evangelicals had become avid followers. Evangelicals had become avid followers of populists and of, for instance, three-time Democratic presidential candidate William Jennings Bryan, who, while holding to some views that Austrians would appreciate, such as his anti-imperialism, was both a fundamentalist and an economic interventionist, sometimes of a fairly extreme sort for his day, such as his support for the nationalization of railroads, although he looked at that in his mind as being partly precipitated by earlier government meddling in the railroad industry. While he had reservations about Wilson's Fed, he advocated government manipulation of the currency, of course. We know he was a silver man, and even willing to go paper money route, of course. He actually considered himself a Jeffersonian. He actually called himself a Jeffersonian, but that's very odd when you compare that label he gave himself and his actual practices. Although, to be fair, he was both anti-big business and anti-big government, too. He was much more in favor of letting states deal with things than he was the federal government, but that's another story. But evangelicals' infatuation with economic intervention did not end with Bryan. Continued, as at least symbolized by many subsequent presidents who were evangelicals, either real or pretend evangelicals, and interventionists like Teddy Roosevelt, Woodrow Wilson, and FDR. Even today, there is a relatively strong minority within evangelicalism which supports variations of, quote, Christian socialism. Interestingly, while the Christian left eschews economic liberty, it is normally not interventionist on foreign policy and pro-personal liberty. The Christian right is the opposite, generally speaking. It's only a very tiny part of evangelicalism, a group called the Christian Reconstructionists, a very small movement within evangelicalism, that are fairly consistent, generally very consistent, free market, economics, non-interventionist on foreign policy. Although the one thing that Austrians would sometimes disagree with, of course, is their view of recommendations regarding criminal law and punishments. This special lack of consistent economic thinking within evangelicalism, and I think the works of Mark Knoll are good to look at on this, and only partial development of a consistent political philosophy has certainly made evangelicals easy prey to faulty or truncated ideas, and also susceptible to attachment to outside ideas espoused by alien, quote-unquote, alien organizations, such as the Republican Party. Talk about that in a minute. So the third problem. Third problem. Another factor is evangelical mistrust of Austrianism is its relatively recent attachment to the National Republican Party. Now, I call this relatively recent. In my research, I perceive that this did not really begin to happen until 1988. In 1980, of course, the evangelicals were big supporters of Ronald Reagan. But I think it was Ronald Reagan and not so much the Republican Party in 1980. It was a reaction. They were not being proactive, they were being reactive to their betrayal by evangelical Jimmy Carter. So they went with Ronald Reagan. Why? Does that mean they really were on board with everything Ronald Reagan talked about? No. By this time, evangelicals had discovered the so-called social issues, like abortion. And that was one thing that Ronald Reagan, of course, focused on among evangelicals. They attached themselves to Ronald Reagan, I think, because of the social issues. They didn't really care about the other issues strongly, in my opinion. So this is a very, I think, significant problem in evangelicalism. Evangelicalism, by 1988, I think, had firmly cast its lot with the Republican Party. This led to an increasingly noticeable parroting of the Christian right, by the Christian right, of the prevailing Republican Party agenda issues. Now, a fourth problem. In the area of foreign affairs, evangelicals have more or less attached themselves to the fortunes of the neoconservative movement, the new neoconservative movement. I call them the neoconservatives. There was an earlier neoconservative movement that was less interested in foreign adventurism. I think now we have a different story. There's a new neo-evangelical movement that is. The fact that Pat Robertson, now you know who Pat Robertson is, hitched his wagon to Rudy Giuliani in the 2008 elections, the one Republican who had virtually nothing in common with evangelicals at all, but who staked himself out as the anti-terrorism candidate, demonstrates this infatuation, this attachment to the new neocons. Now, very specifically, what is the problem here that evangelicals have gotten into? I think two sub-problems. One, their ignorance of just war theory. Now, I don't know how many are really evangelicals in here, but the evangelical community seems to be devoid, almost completely devoid of any knowledge that there's such a thing as just war theory. You find very little literature coming out of the evangelical community, except, again, for some of the Reformed scholars, on just war theory. Now, if they don't have that, what do they have to tell them when war is right or wrong? And I might add here that for evangelicals who believe the Bible is the key, just war theory has a foundation in the Scriptures itself. In the book of Deuteronomy in the Old Testament, chapter 20, read it at your leisure. The second problem is Israel. Now, this is a distinctly theological problem. This may be the linchpin of evangelical foreign policy, which seems surprising to most non-evangelicals. It's almost a tenet of modern evangelicalism that evangelicals must support Israel no matter what. This is part of their theology. This is part of their dispensationalist theology. They must support the modern nation state of Israel because they claim, from their interpretation of scriptures, that this modern nation state is a fulfillment of prophecy of the Bible, and that God will curse those who curse Israel and bless those who bless Israel. Now, it might surprise a lot of evangelicals to know that there is a minority report on the role of Israel, the place of Israel in the modern world. Now, again, this is an internecine squabble among evangelicals. The minority report is this. It is based on different but reasonable and well-established interpretation of the Scriptures, and it says that the church, all those who have faith in Jesus Christ, is the new Israel. The new Israel. The church is the new Israel. Not the modern nation state of Israel. Now you see, if you bought that interpretation, that would pull the rug out from under a lot of what evangelicals hold to in the area of war. And it would undermine their attachment, I think, to neoconservatism. My conclusion. Can Austrians and evangelicals get along? Well, actually my answer is pretty simple on the surface of it. If evangelicals follow their own stated epistemology, in other words, if they read their Bibles seriously, not not borrow other people's interpretations, but if they read their Bible seriously and take the interpretations that are plain and simple from the Scriptures, Austrians, I think, would be very pleasantly surprised with the outcome. That's not what's happening, I would submit to you. That is not what's happening. A couple of things just in passing here at the end that I think are not helpful. Not helpful. First of all, evangelicals already distrust libertarianism. They distrust what they perceive as hyper-libertarianism. That doesn't mean they're interpreting it correctly, by the way, but they still distrust it. An open and vociferous haranguing of evangelicals to the effect that since not all sins are crimes, which is true, then sin is just fine, does not score points with evangelicals. Evangelicals might say this, they might say this, I don't want Big Brother looking at anyone's bedroom windows either. At the same time, I don't need to be told by those in the bedroom what they're doing, and no matter what it is, it's just fine and I have to accept it in some moral sense. See, there's the problem. I think evangelicalism can accept the idea and does accept the idea if shown from Scripture, which if they read Scripture, they'd see not all sins are crimes. The second non-starter, I think, is this. The notion, and again, I think this is a misunderstanding, but it has to be corrected, the notion that government is evil per se, that all government is evil per se. Evangelicalism does accept the idea that government should be limited, and it can, I think, accept the idea that government is a necessary evil. Notice I said a necessary evil. That is, it is necessary because of sinful human nature, and it's evil or potentially evil because of sinful human nature. The same reason. This is no different from what the supporters and the non-supporters of the U.S. Constitution in the 1700s talked about. It's also no different, I think, than chapter 13 of the book of Romans in the Bible. So in conclusion, in final conclusion, let me reiterate, if evangelicals followed their own data from their own Scriptures, their own stated epistemology, I believe that the outcome would be something that would be very closely aligned with Austrianism.